I'm Helen. I'm an improviser.
Hi, Helen.
Okay, you're with friends.
I've been showing off now for 6 years.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm. Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I'm your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers, and today we're talking about the art of improv, and I am beyond delighted to be joined by Gabriel, Lydia, and Tim. As always, we shall introduce ourselves alphabetically. So, Gabriel, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hi, I am Gabriel Garcia. My pronouns are he, him, and I do tech support things for Rusty Quill.
Excellent. And very good you are at it too. Helped me out many a time.
I try my best.
And Lydia, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hello, my pronouns are she, they, and I do various characters in Rusty Quill shows. And I'm most famous, I think, for falling off my chair in Gaming and Giving 2019. So that's my main claim to fame. Other than that, Rusty Quill Gaming, Magnus Archives, I screamed a bit in a cupboard for the one with the werewolves.
Inexplicables,
that was it. I screamed in a cupboard, though. It was a short guest spot. I've been doing improv stuff with folks, with James Ross and Bryn, particularly, now it's like 15 years, because we were in a group before the show started. So it's been long times.
Very long time.
That, and lots of other groups. I did puppet improv for a while. That was fun.
Going to come back to that. That sounds great. Yeah. Okay. All right. And then we've got Tim. What are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hello. My name is Tim Meredith. My pronouns are he, him. I am a co-creator and one of the stars of Stella Firma. Just finished its third season. There's bonus content coming up, but I don't know when this comes out, so I don't know if I can tell you what it is, but it's very exciting. And I also am an improviser. I do musical improv with a troupe called Do The Thing and regular old long-form improv with a group called Tiny Dynamite.
Ooh, lovely. Also, I've just realised that I know what the bonus content is as well.
Ooh, it's exciting! Depending on whether or not the logistics work out. Ooh!
No, I think this will be coming out before that.
That's all right, then.
Okay. All right. So let's do a little sort of establishing shot of a question, which is how did we all get into improv, either as a practitioner or an enjoyer? Would anyone like to tell us their improv story?
I'll go first. I'm not shy.
Okay.
I'm not shy. How dare you? So I got into university. Step one, get into university.
Well done.
Bam. $6,000 a year. Yes, please. Still paying it off when I'm 30. Oh, and some more. Thank you, sir. when I went to university, I was very, very shy, deeply shy. Didn't like to talk to people. Bit of a well of shame. The shame's still there, but it's now covered. I've covered the well, and what I've covered it with is improv. And I got involved in improv at university with the University of Nottingham Improv Society. And it sort of all got out of hand from there. Moved down to Brighton, sunny Brighton, which has a really nice improv scene, and got into some groups. But yeah, it was for me, it was mainly it's very frightening to talk to other people. So why don't we just turn up the difficulty setting to high, so that then regular day-to-day interactions don't feel so frightening. And now I won't shut the fuck up. So it clearly worked.
I cannot imagine you being shy, Tim. Like, at all.
What a distant dream it is now. Oh, God, I wish he was shy. He's still singing. We're not laughing. We stopped laughing and he's still singing. Yeah.
Aww. Well, I like you as you are now, and I'm sure I would have liked you then. Anyone else want to...
Yeah. I should just, I feel like I can jump in because it's a very relatable story. Unlike Tim, I did get into university.
Congrats.
But I failed the audition for the university improvisers.
Oh.
So I remember going to watch them quite a bit. I remember my audition for it vividly because I thought I had some great jokes. And the problem was that I just kept cracking up so much I couldn't speak. it wasn't necessarily that I was laughing at my own brilliant hilarity. That was just part of it. Mostly I was laughing with nervousness. So I didn't get in. I went to see quite a bit of improv, but I didn't get in. And then it was about 4 or 5 years later, I saw a Facebook advert put up by James Ross saying, does anyone want to audition for my improv group? And it just turned out we had a friend in common who had gone to a different university, but one where we shared a pantomime society. So I had done quite a lot of pantomime as a student, which actually weirdly involves quite a lot of improv, obviously. Pantomime, for our American listeners, is like what Shakespeare originally was. So, you know, it's silly costumes, switching up genders and gender roles, making rude comments at the audience and audience participation. And it has about 4 plots, but they are shown every single year and you go back every year because the jokes are different. But yeah, so just because we had a friend in common, the advert showed up in my feed. So I turned up and I got in. And I think that the reason I got into that and that I really wanted to do it was for a similar sort of reason to Tim. It wasn't necessarily that I was shy, but I spent a long time, I struggled really hard with a lot of social interactions. So I would talk, that was fine. I didn't really understand that I was supposed to be quiet, but I really found a lot of like reading other people's emotions difficult, and knowing when I was going on about a topic too long, very difficult. And like, I don't know, just everything from timing to repeating yourself enthusiastically over and over until you get the response that you want.
Trying again and again until they like it. That's the message.
Yeah! So I thought I would go somewhere where people would pay money to see that. But, you know, in a similar sort of way, it's like you turn up the difficulty setting, but you do it in a kind of space where you're expected to slightly mess up a few times. And I already at that point had quite a lot of like tricks up my sleeve of for people that are awkward or struggle. Secret tip, mess up deliberately early on in a conversation and then laugh it off and be in control. And then when you mess up accidentally later, people like you will have an extra half second and people will sort of accept it. I even do that now when I'm facilitating large workshops, and it's actually confused people where they're like, I'm running a big corporate kind of workshop thing with lots and lots of people, and I'll mess up the projector slide people and then laugh about it. And then, like, the next time I run the workshop, I'll do the exact same mistake. And, like, people will be like, oh, what? It's part of a script.
And they just stand up and shout, fraud!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, it's deliberate. Yeah. Like, you know, you can run through scripts in your head that give you more time and flexibility in other things. And that's all what improv does. So that was cool. And so I've done that for a long time now.
Cool.
Tick. See, now I know when you're supposed to stop talking. Yeah, yeah. Look at that.
And you say tick, so people know you're finished.
Exactly.
I prefer done, please.
Yeah. Thank you. Next. Or like in the Hoopla tradition, just like slam the floor and run away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It really upsets optician, but it still works.
Right. Now, Gabriel, we were talking before we started recording how you and I are more enjoyers of the art form than really participants. I guess I do improv in terms
you're
of like
a professional
the gaming
improviser, Helen.
Right.
Cash
so
money.
This is the thing.
Cash money, baby.
You're paid by the hour. Do you know how many like people for whom improv is their whole identity don't get paid by the hour to do it?
Well, like in my head, I feel like if I am an improviser, then I have to be funny. And I, despite several people telling me I'm funny, I don't think of myself as a funny person. but other people think I am. So,
I mean, luckily they're the ones paying, so it's all right.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Ah, aha.
Firstly, you are funny. Secondly, it's valid to do stuff that doesn't pay you money. I should flag that. That's very, very valid.
Counterpoint, no. Unless this is a Tim Meredith counterpoint. No, if you're not paid, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not real. So the first two seasons of Rusty Quill just don't exist.
Yeah, they don't. No. You think they do.
Until we got an advert or whatever.
It's like the Berenstain Bears.
But there's a bottom line to every piece of it.
So, yeah, Gabriel, tell me how you got into improv.
So my improv story is a bit different from these two. I did make it into college, but I didn't actually go. So as a result, I did not end up working with, an actual improv group. But it was something that always interested me. It was like there's comedy and then there's like the scary comedy, which I which is what I pictured as improv. But I didn't really start getting into it until one day all of my friends decided they wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I was all for it until no one else wanted to DM, because that's always how that works. And they handed me all the books and said, you're going to make a campaign for us. And I said, OK. And we did a very short run that I actually had a lot of fun with. And I decided that I wanted to do things like that more. And when I started working at a game store later in high school / early college or college years, I didn't actually. When I started working there, there was an opportunity to actually be a dungeon master like for the store and run groups for customers and things.
Oh, that's cool.
So when I saw...
Professional dungeon master.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was real because you were paid. Interesting.
So when I saw that, I immediately wanted to do that, but I was terrified of running games for strangers. Mm. So I ended up actually doing a very short run of improv classes to kind of get more comfortable with doing weird voices and making and collaborating on weird jokes with strangers. and it ended up helping a lot with that job or that part of that job, and it just continued from there. I still have not joined an improv group, and I don't think I will anytime soon, but it is, I do occasionally go to shows, and I've read a few books on improv, and it's a very interesting subject. It's also helped me, in completely unrelated parts of my life. I've been a musician for a long time, and practicing improv has helped with being in like jam bands and things like that. And just being able to read the people around you is a useful skill in a lot of life.
And taking a failure as maybe not like, oh, well, let's start again. But okay, like, oh, well, that wasn't what I meant to do, but it might be better than what I was trying to do, so let's have a go with it. And that is quite handy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, a lot of my day-to-day job has involved me being in kind of by panel discussions or in workshop things about quite, like, complicated policy stuff with often people who are vastly more senior than me. And there's something about there's something that I very much credit improv with, of always being able to kind of come up with a comment or an understanding or respond to things, and just having that extra confidence to reshape the thing you were going to say, to draw quickly on the knowledge that you have and reapply it to a kind of slightly changed circumstance. And like, I don't think that every fun, silly skill that you take joy in needs to have application in your working life to be valid.
Sure.
But like, it's, for me, it's super has.
It just often does.
You know? Yeah. It absolutely has. In day-to-day life, I'm a much more relaxed person because I can read what people around me are doing, so I'm less likely to panic. Mm. And like, yeah, I'm better at job stuff.
This is so interesting for me to hear, because I've always been this kind of loud person. Like, I was never shy. I was like, pretty young, I was like, I want to be on stage and yell at people. So I've never had to really get over any fears like that. And then, of course, like I said, I never thought of the tabletop stuff I did as improv. I thought of it as, I thought those were like new skills I was learning in terms of how to play a game.
I mean, it's a combination of the two.
And for me, it was really revolutionary to realize, oh, adults also play.
Yeah.
Play is important at all stages of life, and I can be silly and pretend to do things.
But when Googling adult play, you have to be very careful. As long as you keep that in mind.
Safe search on.
It's fine. Adults play, but they also play. And you just need to know what the difference is, and you'll be all right.
What do you think you need to be good at improv?
I think one thing you don't need is to be good at jokes. And it's very important that you don't think that when you go in as well, because a lot of early improv is, gosh, I need to make some jokes, and that's almost the antithesis of improv.
Can you go into that a little bit more, Tim?
Yeah, so the real fundamentals of improv is agreeing with and building upon somebody else's stuff. You know, they give you something, some sort of theme or some sort of topic or some sort of, you know, it could be a sentence, whatever, and then you build upon it and you build a world together and it continues. A joke by its very nature is a closing off and an ending. Like, a joke is kind of an endpoint. So if you sort of start a scene and you think, oh, that's funny, and I'll, you know, somebody's like, oh, well, there's these things happening. Jokes are often subversive. So if, like, these things happening, ah, well, actually, I'm going to say these things aren't happening because that's what you thought was going on, and they're not. And now it's over, and the scene can't really continue in that traditional joke format. Now, you can have a big discussion about, well, you know, jokes come in different forms, but in the kind of the very stand-up-y, traditional joke format, what you're basically doing is ending scenes. And it's also very difficult for the other person to interact with you on that joke, because you know what the joke is, but they don't. So all of these things mean that if you come into it with an attitude of, I'm going to make jokes and punchlines, you're going to have a lot of scenes that have a good funny bit in them and then have to stop because you've ended them in some way.
I see.
And I think, building on that, the thing that you need, but which I think with work you can very much build and learn from improv, so you don't need to start out with it, is a capacity to trust and a willingness to trust and a kind of vulnerability and taking seriously other people's trust in you. So if you're going out on stage without a script in mind, the only thing that you can rely on is the other people there. And so long as you trust them absolutely, you will come up with something entertaining, especially if you have practiced for a long time and you know that the other person has similar kinds of structures and end goals and ideas in their mind. But even if things begin to go a bit belly up, or if they begin to go really, really well, and you can kind of see where the game is in the scene. Oh, we can talk about the game in a bit as well. That's probably key. But, like, if you can see where the scene is going, and you can trust that the other person is seeing a similar kind of thing, or you trust that they will pick up what you're putting down and that they know that they can put down stuff that you will also pick up and that you will do that building together. And that's why I think the improv's really cool as a thing to do. Even just as an exercise, it is very good if, for whatever reason, trust in social situations is something that you struggle with or something that makes you anxious. Not necessarily if you're shy, that's one thing. If you just, like, sometimes get anxious, if you struggle to understand what's going on, if you find yourself sometimes getting aggressive because you don't really... In my case, I just didn't always understand what people's expressions meant, so lots of learning and practice. You just learn that trust is okay and can get you to a good place, and you practice off stage, and then good things happen. And so it's kind of something that you need to have, but you really, I suppose, only need to come to it willing to learn it.
Yeah.
Because you can learn it by doing.
And you will be crap. Like, there's no getting around it. You've got to go in with an attitude rather than a skill, because unless you've already done it, it'd be like, I'm going to take up archery. Oh, I'm bad at archery, so I shouldn't do it. Well, what did you you're going to need to.
Oh no, I didn't hit the target. But
yeah, exactly. And I suppose that the thing that often I think keeps people away is practicing something and failing quietly and privately mm-hmm. on your own is one thing. Mm. You have to do improv in public. So mm-hmm. you have to fail in front of other people, which is what makes it difficult, but which also makes mm-hmm. it very valuable. Mm-hmm. Because mostly improv is getting out of your own way and realizing that they're not failures. They are opportunities to do, to sound like a really horrible sales seminar. Every failure is an opportunity to grow. And I actually
so keep investing in my scheme.
I have a very reasonably priced pamphlet that you can buy on this subject. Yeah, getting out your own way and not worrying about failure. And because mm-hmm. and, I think, going back to my point about making jokes, you don't make the jokes. Mm. You hang around in the right headspace until jokes occur around yeah. you. They will happen. It's mm-hmm. almost impossible mm. for them to not, unless you are in such a serious space that they couldn't possibly. And even then, I think improv is quite a good way of taking yeah. really quite serious topics very carefully
yeah.
And engaging in humour in them, because, you know, you just kind of state the facts and the humour in them emerges
because,
in a way that, you know.
Like, some of the biggest laughs that I've had in improv have been watching people that are really skilled in doing pretty serious stuff and are even doing quite tragic scenes, but human experience is inherently hilarious, right? Like even yeah. the awful bits, and like in the absolute darkest times of my life, there has been like absurdity, if not
yeah.
levity. Mm. And so you can have like I'm literally like thinking of something and cracking up now. Like this thing about people did a scene where clearly someone had died and it was awful and they were grieving and someone had come over and tried to help. But like, it was just that, so they were trying to hold the other person's grief as like the center of the thing. They made a lasagna and they realized there were no oven gloves and they were just like desperately trying to listen and hear. And like, but also the lasagna was burning. And so like in that, like panicking, trying to hold, and we've all kind of been there of trying to hold someone else's like emotions and their mental headspace as like the center. Mm-hmm. So while concentrating, just grabs the lasagna pan without the oven gloves. And then the other person turns around and just starts opening up. It's just standing there like holding that whole thing. And I still remember it, even though that was like 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that scene. They're like, the thing that is genuinely recognizable and would be so hard to write about, but emerges from that complete trust of people that are in the same space that have built this thing, and mm-hmm. then like it going slightly more absurd. But like, yeah. honestly, it was funny at the stages before that where he was trying to do quite normal things while completely holding this person's like grief in mind. And like just struggling with the awkwardness of it. But then it just escalated and became more and more strange. But because it was still trying to be so serious, it was still hilarious.
The thing that I always struggled with in you know, with improv in the form that I do it, at least, and I think is something that you really need to be good at, is killing your darlings. Mm. Yeah. I think that's huge in improv. You know, anytime I've run a tabletop game and I've come in with a bunch of plot points lined out and a bunch of plans and encounters and things to do, goes off the rails immediately.
So lovingly crafted.
Yeah,
over
so
hours.
Lovingly crafted. It goes off the rails with a single decision 10 minutes in, and I have to, you know, to make up everything from then on anyway. And I think it's taught me that that's, you know, I'll go into a situation with some idea of how things are going to go, but for the most part, I've learned to not be as attached to things like that, and I think that's a lot of the same in improv. You know, you can't really, like you were saying, Tim, you can't go in there with, like, you know, jokes, you know, already starting to be formed and preconceived, like things that you're going to do, or else it's going to put you in a box. And I think just building off of what Lydia was saying on trust, it's trust
such
in the
an
other
improviser.
it's trust in the other people, but it's also a lot of trust in yourself.
Yes.
To recognize that, like, you know, I'm going to have situations that I don't know how to respond immediately, and I'm gonna have to trust that the first thing that comes out of my mouth is gonna be the right path, and even if it's not, it's the path I'm going down anyway. And
absolutely, Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think it gives you a kind of confidence that is, like, necessarily not cocky.
Yeah.
Like, it's a confidence that comes from, like, knowing that you can cope, but that isn't a confidence that makes you want to become the star. It's like...
Yeah, right. The kind of confidence where you can give it to someone else and be like, ah, okay, what you've got is good, so you have it.
Because
the show will be good, as opposed to I will... Exactly. Come out the other end of it looking really bloody smart.
It's like hot potato of confidence.
It's been really interesting listening to you all talk, because this is a... I asked this question, what do you think you need to be good at improv, without knowing what my own answer was. And so now I have lots and lots of thoughts.
What is your answer?
So what I reckon, after, you know, reluctantly realizing that I am indeed an improviser myself.
Such a shameful admission.
I am Helen. I'm an improviser.
Hi, Helen.
Okay, you're with friends.
I've been showing off now for 6 years.
I worry that I'm about to, like, just summarize what everyone said, but I think that one of the things that you do need to be good at improv is, like, an ability to... No, I'm going to say it with the phrase that's coming into my head. The ability to sort of just cast yourself on the mercy of whoever else is on the stage.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It feels to me like it's a trapeze act.
Yeah.
That one where you're dangling upside down and they're dangling upside down. You have to let go and they have to catch you.
Yeah.
And I think I'm very lucky that the majority of my improv experience has been specifically improv experience where I've been aware that it is meant to be a lighthearted sort of comedy type show, despite what the plot says.
Despite all the evidence and content. Yeah.
The scene opens. I'm covered in blood. Time for fun.
I think I've been very lucky to have a group around me that I could trust.
Yeah.
And that trust did have to build, I think, because I didn't know Alex and I didn't know Bryn, like, at all, for that first audition episode, the one in which I play a character with no name.
What do you? I can't remember who that was.
Yeah, it's a weird one that, you know, it was my audition episode and yet I did not have a character.
It's strange how that happened.
For listeners not in the know, this is an in-joke about the Beowulf episodes of Rusty Quill Gaming.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't actually forgotten Helen's performance. It was an incredible performance. and genuinely, can that bring us into the discussion of the game? Because that was a perfect example of a game in improv.
Do you know what? We're going to go to a break and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Lydia has unfortunately died and will not be able to appear in the rest of this episode of Enthusiasm. See you soon.
That is unfortunate, because the rest of this episode will be talking about the game.
Yeah. They would have loved this if only they weren't dead now.
Very sad, very sad.
And welcome back. So, Lydia, please elaborate about the game.
I am dead and therefore... cannot.
Lydia is dead and we have killed them.
Yes.
Much like God.
Yeah. Much like God is my band name.
such a very sort of, like, chill way. I'm much like God. No, I'm not God. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, like, let's not go overboard.
Come on.
It's very similar.
Not go overboard.
Rein your neck in.
Like, you know. The game in improv is basically something that keeps happening, but more.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the break, you wanted to bring up the first game I played with the RQG lot as a good example.
Yes.
And I do think that is a good idea, because we should not assume that everybody who listens to this podcast even knows who we are.
Yeah. No.
So what happened was, the first time we recorded, I recorded with Rusty Quill Gaming to replace James Ross, my nemesis. Because he had left and he needed another player. And so my audition episode was a three-parter called Thanes of Beowulf. And we were all given the same character sheet. We were all barbarians. So the only things that we could change, we all have the same stats and everything. The only things that we could change were like names and personalities. And we all had proficiency in bagpipes as well. I remember that.
I don't think that really came up.
No.
But that's fine. You kill your darlings.
You do.
Alex sitting there thinking, but I've written such a good bagpipe scene. When will they get to the bagpipe festival?
So, I decided my character was called Ulf the Unremembered, and that he was cursed by a witch that everybody would forget who he was because he was very concerned with building a legacy, but he pissed off a witch and she said, well, no one will ever remember you ever again.
And it continued from there.
Yes. Every time I said something in a scene, everyone's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Sorry. You kept saying a stowaway.
It would often be genuine delight that you'd turned up because we were playing barbarians who were quite distracted and not necessarily academically inclined. So like Bryn was playing someone who was either obsessed with or kept killing bears.
Yeah.
And kept pointing bears out when they weren't actually bears, but he just kept turning around in delight and like, a friend, a new friend, where did you come from? And lots of things, and even to the point where we'd swum down to the bottom of a lake in the middle of nowhere having fought a leopard or something.
Yeah.
Which was like, oh, hello, that's fancy seeing you here, new friend, blah, 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 blah. You know, underwater. And it just kept happening. But the fact that it was the thing that then people in the Discord, people on Twitter and Tumblr and whatever were still making the jokes because it's a nice, simple game. The point is that you're always doing fascinating things. You're part of the group. You're doing the thing. And then you're not like, oh, hello, new friend. And it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And it ended up being like part of what determined the ending of that one shot.
Yeah.
Because eventually Ulf got so fed up with no one remembering who he was.
Yep.
Killed the entire village.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, you don't know who I am.
Remember that, you bastards.
And it was the fact that I think it's just a really lovely example of what we'd all been saying about like confidence and trust. Like it was genuinely, I think, quite scary for everyone. Like you coming for your first audition, because of course, James, we'd lost to the tragedy of parenthood.
We mourn for him every day.
I shouldn't say I am the godmother of the child. So like I'm pro the child. Yeah. But
not what you said off the call, but okay, no, continue.
What? No, No.
What? So what's that?
But like, you know, we'd had the same people around the table for quite a while. Yeah. And I was like, oh, can we do this without? And James is very loud and funny. Can we do this without James? And you turned up and you didn't know half the people there. And the other two of us, you knew from very different contexts, right? Like we knew each other.
And
from...
not that well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the fact is that you set something up that was funny. And then like there was this sort of slight tentative like, oh, who are you? And you just ran with it. And so it could escalate and escalate and escalate. And we, by the end, were just like absolutely in tears of laughter.
A game is something, as you say, it happens more than once. Patterns and repetition are inherently funny. Yeah. Ask any toddler. but a good one is a game that everyone can play. Like it's not exclusionary. It by its very nature, anybody can join in.
Mm.
And not only does it make it funny, but it also makes it fun, which are two different things, because there are many things that are very funny, but not fun at all.
Yep.
But improv tries to be both. Doesn't always succeed, but it tries.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really useful. Are there any other like improv terms that we should talk about or no?
Well, there's we've already talked about yes and, which is about building on.
I don't think we defined it though.
Mm-hmm. It's just the rule.
A concept. It's a concept very bluntly delivered by the phrase yes and. Mm. Somebody says something and you say yes, that is the case, and that. And when you start, you literally there are exercises where you say yes and, but it's more a habit because you can say no.
Yeah.
Like you can say the words no while still totally accepting everything somebody's given to you and building upon it.
Like refusing to recognise that Ulf exists.
Yeah.
Like our denial of Ulf's existence and character was our yesing to your game.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. I want to talk about if we have any favourite sketches that we've seen or done. or like good improvisational moments that you've enjoyed. And Gabrielle, I am going to come to you on this. I want you to start us off, if that's okay. Has there ever been something where, because you said that you've been DMing for a while and you found that if you ever planned anything, it went off the rails. So did you ever like cope with something you were like, oh, that was quite good actually?
So my current entire campaign that I've been running for about a year and a half has been one long improv.
Oh, really?
My players don't know that. They frequently ask to see my notes. and, you know, they want to see, you know, everything that I've planned out in the sprawling campaign that I've created for them. I wrote notes for, like, the first chapter, and then they took over from there.
You've been holding blank sheets of paper this whole time.
Incredible.
Well, the great thing is we do it over Discord. Ah. So I'm just like, oh, yes, I am looking at my notes. I'm totally not just thinking of what to do next. In the past, I've DM'd that, you know, I've planned out a lot more, but I knew this group of people. I've known them for a long time. They're my friends. And I wanted to be a bit more loose with this one. And so they've been, you know, a lot of the decision, like every plot point at this point is a result of a decision that they've made at some point. And it's just, it's interesting when tabletop games are, you know, more collaborative, I feel like.
Yeah.
There was, and I guess the example that I was leading towards is there was a chapter that we played that had a huge plot twist at the end, right? I won't go into it because that's not going to be interesting to anyone but me and this group. But, you know, there was a point like four sessions into this chapter that one of my players, like I heard, you know, them get an idea and they said, oh my God, like this clue, like this is the plot twist of the chapter. like that's insane. And I'm sitting there like, that was all coincidence, but that's a brilliant idea for for a plot twist. You know what? You guessed it.
Yeah, well done.
Yes, I have been carefully placing all of these clues this entire chapter. It definitely didn't just all happen to line up. And I think the reason it lined up was because this campaign has been so collaborative that it's just things like that naturally come out of the story. So no one tell my players that there aren't actually any notes for this campaign.
That's the true plot twist.
Yeah.
It's between us and however many listeners we get.
It's a really good magic trick that you described there, and it's what we often use in the stage version. Like we'll do shows and people come up to us and go, it was so cool how you had this bit and you had that bit, and then they came together and they all did this, and I'll be going, I didn't notice that happened, but I'm not going to tell you that because A,
right,
I want to look real good, and B, no one likes to be told like, oh no, that wasn't that. It's so much more fun to be like, yeah,
right,
isn't that great how it all came together?
Plan from the start.
It's a great life skill. Take credit where you can get it. Really,
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I should do that more often. Yeah. Actually, I can be honest to a fault. So yeah. I will try and make people feel good by making them feel clever in future. Yeah.
And sort of to kind of build on that a little bit, the favorite like source of games and source of fun is often in, oh, we can use some terminology, the cross initiation, where you both come with a thing and you both basically, ooh, lay it on the table at the same time and you see what that does. So you, mm, neither of you knows what's going on, but you lay it out and go, right, mm-hmm, what's now happened? Because you'll come up with stuff that you would never have come up with if you sat down together and thought, right, let's think of a fun scene. A good example of that in a scene that I can remember was ages ago, we were doing a show at the Comedia, and I came on at the back and started filling a hot air balloon. At the same time, two of the other performers came at the front and started breaking up. So so they were having quite an intense breaking up scene, and I've already established myself as a man midway through filling a hot air balloon. So immediately the implication is they've come for a hot air balloon date And midway there, they realise, actually, we're breaking up. And so as the conversation goes on, I'm inflating and deflating the balloon depending on how I reckon it's going. So I was like, you know what? I think they're going to make it through this. Let's fill up the balloon. Oh, no, that was a mistake to say. This is over. So I'm just at the back as a sort of a weird relationship barometer. And neither of us came up with that. And for most of the start of the scene, they didn't know what I was doing because they were facing out and I was behind. But yeah, we wouldn't have come up with that as an idea. Aww. But it sort of just emerged. And everyone was like, oh, God, what a good joke. And right. You're like, yeah, it's one that we made. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Made it.
What about you, Lyd? Do you have a favourite thing you've done?
So a few things stand out from like in the old Fat Kitten days, where there were scenes that went like unexpectedly emotional. Like there was one where me and Bryn did a scene in like rehearsal where it was an alphabet scene where you have to start every line with the next letter of the alphabet. It's just one of the many like exercises you do to kind of get your brain going. And it just turned into this thing where he was like old grizzled tube maintenance worker and I was like young newbie, like on my work experience. And the crux of it was that there are terrible ancient monsters and down in the tubes, and that is what you hear scream when the train's coming through. And he had a massive gun and I just had a stick, because it turned out when it was my turn to say something that it was the letter S. So he's like, and that's why I gave you a, and I was like, stick. Stick. And so there's this like, well, you know, and then we head off deep into the tunnels, and there was a like, you know, will we, you know, W, will we come back? Why, I don't know. thing, and I had that with a couple of things. I had like a end of the world one with James Ross on stage, I remember, where it was just like I think we were like burning a television or something, and he was trying to tell me what was on TV before the world ended, and I was being some kind of, again, weird kid that didn't
apocalypse
know.
Apocalypse teen.
Yeah, apocalypse teen that didn't know about, like, pop TV references. And it was
bottled
quite
water. All right, granddad, yeah. Quiet down.
Yeah, was that like The Simpsons? They'll be gone. You know, whatever. And, like, those things where something just works and it's good. I remember those. But I think one of the things recently is I've gotten into I do a lot of like foresight research work for different kinds of innovation companies and stuff, and I got over the last few years I've been doing more teaching with that. So I've been teaching a master's course on future thinking and world building, and I have basically turned a few like improv games into things that the students can do as part of this design course, where they're coming up with a world and problems to solve and new technologies, and then they're using that for their kind of design course. And it's just been kind of amazing where doing improv with no expectation of comedy, sort of seeing people come up with really strange and sometimes very dark and often absurd sort of ideas for weird new tech, and then people that sort of come in quite awkwardly being like, I'm an engineer. And then by the end, they're telling quite a kind of deep and complex story because I've set them up with like, they have to create an object. They have to create some like characters and they don't know that they're doing really basic improv games.
Okay, so we're actually nearly at the end of the episode.
Hello.
We're going to have to call this episode to a close. I think this has been a very good episode. I'm very pleased with all of you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
We did it. We did podcast well.
We did storytell word thing. Woo!
This has been lovely. This has been generally lovely. Listeners, I hope you have enjoyed it too. And I will see you in the next episode. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from all of my lovely guests. Do you all want to say goodbye?
Bye. Bye.
Prego.
You're terrible. Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lowry Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Jeffrey Nils Gardner, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.